This episode of Nerd and Tie is brought to you by Strange Things Afoot. Are you tired of playing games involving the same old stereotypical fantasy characters, cybernetic enhanced mercenaries, and spandex-clad superheroes? Then step into the world of Strange Things Afoot, a world where almost everything on the internet is true. Strange Things Afoot is an upcoming role-playing game that draws influence from the world of creepypasta and urban legends. Players in the campaign take the role of middle to high school age students as they struggle against supernatural beings known as tulpas. Tulpas are mysterious creatures that can only manifest in our reality when people believe in them, and they use the internet as a way to spread that belief. Technology plays an important role in the game, as characters will need to research rituals and use the internet to turn the power of belief against the tulpas. You can keep up to date with game developments by visiting Point of Insanity Game Studio's Facebook page, following them on Twitter at POI Game Studio, checking out their podcast at poigamestudio.podbean.com, and supporting the Strange Things Afoot project on Kickstarter. This episode of Nerd and Tie is also sponsored by Mr. Pez. Mr. Pez is a person and not an actual Pez dispenser, so please do not attempt to grab his head and violently jerk it back to see if candy will come out. It won't come out. It'll just involve an injury lawsuit. So thank you, Mr. Pez. If you'd like to personally sponsor an episode of Nerd and Tie, just go to nerdandtie.com, click on the sponsor information, and find out more. Or you can contribute to our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie.
On this episode of Nerd and Tie, FanFest Nashville turned out to be a bit of a garbage fire. Meatloaf is suing Texas Frightmare Weekend. All three of us went to EverCon. And our big topic this week, the Skywalker saga as a whole. Those and more on Nerd and Tie.
Woohoo!
I am one of the hosts, Gan Proc, and with me today, as usual, are the amazing Trey Dorn.
I amaze people 3 to 4 times a week.
And the fantastic Nick Izumi.
I have been described as fantastic by some.
Or at least Gan.
At least me. Because
by at least Gan. Aw, oh, thank you.
Another talk together, even though we just saw each other. Like,
it's true.
But it was at a con that doesn't do panels, so we didn't do a Nerd and Tie Live. So,
yep.
We're home in our studios.
But speaking of conventions, going through the rundown, first things first. FanFest Nashville.
Oh my God, guys. FanFest Nashville.
What's the stitch on it?
So I almost made this the whole, like, I almost was going to argue that we make this the whole topic of the episode because FanFest Nashville was such a garbage fire. So we've been, like, if you've been following Nerd and Tie's convention coverage for the past year-ish, we've been talking a lot about FanFest and Walker Stalkers LLC, the company that owns it, which also runs the Walker Stalker cons. Used the Heroes and Villains brand for a while. I think they've just phased that out for FanFest. But I really think they've phased out everything because FanFest Nashville was an absolute disaster. It took place the first weekend in January in not actually in Nashville, technically. It was in a suburb, but it was originally scheduled for anyone who hasn't been following the saga of Walker Stalkers LLC and their FanFest brand and all this stuff. There's been like a mess. Like they had, if you look back over the last year, they had a guy. Oh God, how do I even? They have the UK version of their corporation has gone bankrupt twice. Like, they had one go bankrupt, yeesh. Sell it, and they sold the assets to a new company, which then went bankrupt. They canceled and postponed numerous events. Like this Nashville event was originally supposed to take place in August, and got postponed till January. They had an incident at their Atlanta event where event security like screamed at one of the guests who is hard of hearing and had her hearing aids off. So one of the actors from The Walking Dead got yelled at and freaked out at by a security guard. And like a whole bunch of actors said they were going to boycott the show going forward. A whole bunch of actors from The Walking Dead were going to boycott the show. Owner James Frazier supposedly stepped down from managing the company, and Michael DeVault became CEO for a week before leaving the job. Tickets got suspended for shows and then reopened for some shows. It's been, like, this has been an adventure. This has been watching, like, a car crash in slow motion. So what we got to is, so FanFest Nashville, that the got moved venues so last minute that the Eventbrite page, like at the weekend of the con, was still showing the old venue listed. And it ended up at the Williamson County AG Center, which AG stands for agricultural. Literally, they put carpet down on the dirt floor where like horses do stuff. They had a huge number of guest cancels. It was 20-something guests originally, and then it ended up down to 11, and even some of those guests didn't end up there. Like Tyler Mane and Michael Rowe, both of those actors ended up technically canceling their appearances last minute, but it turns out it's because no one bought them airplane tickets. I'm not kidding. This is stuff that happens. So, James Frazier, the owner of Walker Stalkers LLC, which owns FanFest Nashville, was not in the country during this, I will point out. He was in China because he's adopting, which, you know, that's fine, but he rescheduled the con for this weekend knowing he'd be out of the country. And you know who was actually on the ground, actually running the staff? From all accounts, former CEO Michael DeVault, who everyone thought was no longer with the company. And he made some weird comments in Rate That Comic-Con recently that he then deleted, where like he talked about like not actually being the one in charge, but he was the one leading the volunteer and staff meetings and stuff. So whoever was supposed to be in charge, Michael DeVault appears to be the one who was actually in charge during the show, regardless of who was supposed to be running this. The hotel's payments for guests were not paid. Guess who paid for the hotel rooms and remaining stuff for the guests and arranged security because there wasn't enough staff? Dog the Bounty Hunter did, because he was also a guest at the con. So Dog the Bounty Hunter effectively is the reason why this con happened. There were people who paid for like VIP tickets that were like $500 that like got nothing. Like, and there was so little security that anyone literally could have walked onto the floor, from what I'm told. There were no reliable weapons checks for cosplay.
Oh, geez.
They're like, if there were weapon checks happening, they were not consistent. Where and so it's literally this is a garbage fire. Like, even like the people who would normally defend Walker Stalkers LLC and like apologists for this company seemed like I snuck myself into a couple of Facebook groups that I didn't post of, but even they seemed pretty resigned about this whole mess. So combined with their ongoing financial issues, I'm willing to put money down that Walker Stalkers LLC and the FanFest brand are done. Like, this is,
I'd say put a fork in it. That's doesn't sound like it's going anywhere.
I mean, to have one of your guests run most of the security for your convention is,
and pay for the other guests' hotel rooms.
Not just a guest, Dog the Bounty Hunter. I mean, like, if anyone knows security, to be fair.
Yeah. Be glad it was Dog the Bounty Hunter, you know.
I mean, I guess it's Dog the Bounty Hunter's kind of a terrible person, but
it was just a joke. Like, I don't.
I know.
It's, yeah, and honestly, if he wasn't there and like willing to do that, like,
oh,
they would not have had it in anyways.
When the day is saved by arguably the worst person in the building, you know things were bad.
Yeah.
I'm being mean because I disagree with things that Dog the Bounty Hunter has said and done. No, so yeah, I'm fine.
No, it's just,
yeah.
I mean, it's I mean, yeah, if he wasn't there at all to offer that in the first place, like,
yeah, I wrote this all up in an article that you can find on nerdandtie.com in our convention news section, but like, I reached out to Walker Stalkers for comment on this on the article that I wrote, and I still have not received any response from the company.
That one.
Although Michael DeVault did have time to go into the Rate That Comic-Con, like, Rate That Comic-Con Facebook group, which, by the way, is a group that, in my experience, is kind of biased towards show promoters, and he just got roasted in there, from what I can tell, and he deleted all of his comments and flounced. It was... He had time to do that, but no one at Walker Stalkers LLC has time to, like, say anything about what happened, even defend it.
Jeez.
And so I am putting this out there. If someone from Walker Stalkers LLC would like to reach out and explain to me exactly what happened, or if I'm wrong about anything, I would love to hear it. I would love to give your side of the story. I don't think they're going to. I don't think they listen to this show. But, you know, just come on.
Yeah. Yep.
No one can say we didn't try.
I mean, they can say. I mean people lie on the internet all the time.
People lie on the internet?
It's true.
Whoa.
I can't believe it.
Who would have thought? I don't know. Do we have much more to say about Walker Stalker Nashville?
I don't have any more thing else. This is just a garbage fire.
Like, yeah. Because I could dig up like 20 more bad things about this con, but like, they're just...
If you want to know more, go read the article.
Yeah. This was the highlights, but go read the article or just... And we have some links to some posts from Twitter with like photos of what the show actually looked like, and it's just not... It's especially impressive considering that their Nashville show just even a few years ago was huge. And, you know, and they were pressing for space, and now it was like... I swear, like, if it weren't for the fact that there were celebrities there, I would say, oh, this looks like a small-town Comic-Con. You know, like one of those $5 entry Comic-Cons that'll, like, pop up in a small town.
Yep.
Like, photos of it look like that, except there's, like, minor celebrities. We'll talk about Evercon in a bit, but I'm fairly certain Evercon was busier.
I'm 100% certain Evercon was better. But...
Well, yeah. And that's a con with zero guests.
Uh-huh.
Well, speaking of conventions with big-name guests, it sounds like Texas Frightmare Weekend had an issue with one of theirs.
Or did one of theirs have an issue with them?
Yeah. Because Meatloaf is suing them.
Meatloaf again?
So Michael Leaday, better known as Meatloaf, and who we will now on like exclusively refer to as Meatloaf, but technically he has a real name and we have said it out loud. He's suing Texas Frightmare Weekend and its venue, the Hyatt Regency, Dallas-Fort Worth, in Tarrant County, Texas. Tarrant County, where all the convention lawsuits happen. So that's where Vic Mignogna is. And he sued. Okay. In case people were missing that, that was just... I've looked at more Tarrant County filings in the last year than I ever thought I would look at in my entire life. Meatloaf appeared at their show last May, so May 2019. And it's in Dallas. And Texas Frightmare Weekend is your typical horror con. They had a bunch of, they had a couple people from Rocky Horror. I think, I don't know if Tim Curry was also a guest that year, but he's been a guest there. So yeah, it's, but apparently Meatloaf fell off the stage at the con.
Yikes.
He fell like through the curtains and fell off the back of the stage. The curtains come past the bottom of the stage where participants were walking and hid where the stage ended, creating a hidden hazard, according to the lawsuit. Meatloaf sustained injuries to his neck, collarbone, and shoulder, and he was hospitalized for 42 days following the incident. He claims it has destroyed his career.
That destroyed his career.
Well, I mean, he's claiming he can't perform. Which, you know, he just because he's not, like, a massive, draw anymore doesn't mean he wasn't regularly booking gigs. You know?
Right, that's fair.
Yeah.
It's, he's not going to, hit something, he's not going to have, another hit the size of stuff off of, Bat Out of Hell 2, that's not, but, yeah, and I don't know if, there's no way that the hotel doesn't have insurance to cover this sort of thing, so I don't think the hotel's probably super worried. The question is whether Texas Frightmare Weekend has insurance, because a lot of conventions don't, because the hotel's insurance covers most things that would happen. But when you take a look at a stage, you have to ask if the curtain was set up by it. The question is that why did he fall? Was the curtain set up by the hotel or by the convention? If it was the convent, if the stage and curtain were set up by the hotel staff, the convention may not be at fault. But and this may just become, but if the convention set up the curtain and or if it was the convention's cables, if he tripped on those or something like that, that the hotel was not a part of, then the convention might be liable. And whether or not that convention has, there's a reason why physical setups like that for the conventions I've helped run, the hotel takes care of all of that and not us. You know what I mean?
Right. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's because that keeps the liability away from. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. This may just end up completely settling out of court and no additional stuff, ever surfaces from this lawsuit. But I think it'll be interesting to see. I think for whether or not a convention is liable in this situation is something that everyone needs to pay attention to, especially people who run conventions. Because if the convention is found liable, everyone probably needs to get better insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be some heavy stuff.
Or just don't put guests on a stage. Or always put stairs in the open.
Yes.
Yeah.
Clear pathways.
Big yeah.
Don't hurt Meatloaf.
No.
Well, he would do anything for love.
But he won't do that.
No, he won't do that.
You know, that song is actually really clear about what he won't do if you listen all the way to the bridge, but people but what won't he do? I'm like, listen to the lyrics of the song. He spells out exactly what he won't do. He's saying he won't cheat on her. That's literally in the bridge. Oh, well, I guess it's time to probably move on to the next story and, because we've only gotten through two, and two out of three ain't bad, but
let's talk about a good convention that we all like a lot.
No one's going to comment on my pun, and I'm sad. Evercon!
I knew it was a pun, but no congratulations. But congratulations to Evercon on their 20th anniversary.
Heck yeah.
Yarp. Although they've really only been the con that they are now for like the last like 5 years or something.
I mean.
Or however many years. 4 years? How long have they been in the convention center?
They've only been there for like.
What year did we write that one article about the guy who has since passed?
I was still living with my parents. yeah, I don't remember how long ago I wrote the Scott Wendorski article.
Where we all forget years.
Look, there's a point where you just get... so that was 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, it's... So
I don't know. See, I would argue that Evercon was still pretty magical even before they were.
Well, I'm not saying they weren't. I'm just saying that it was, you know, a different beast.
Mm-hmm. They were inside a middle school, and it was amazing.
Now they're inside kind of a funky hook convention center, which is in a strip mall. But, like, mm-hmm. in a good way.
Yeah.
Evercon is, like... I love Evercon so much. I have so much fun every year I go. Like, I think this is my third year there. And it's just so much fun.
Same. And, like, I was having people ask me, like, why I keep coming. And it's like, because my friends are here.
It continues to be a favorite for me.
What, because like, I'm literally friends with half the vendor room?
Yeah, like, we have, like, a ton of friends who go there, and, like, it's always a really chill, like, convention, you know? I don't know, it's really cool.
Yeah.
You get LARPers, like, marching around the vendor hall sometimes.
Yeah, looking for their clues. It's
the orc.
Fun.
It's I think the attendance is around 1,000, I think, maybe more. But it's a small gaming convention in the Wausau, Wisconsin area. It's just south of Wausau. In a town whose name I forget. But
Rothschild.
Yeah, it's
Rothschild.
Yeah, it's effectively Wausau. For anyone looking at a map, you'll find Wausau on a map of Wisconsin. You won't find Rothschild unless you squint. But,
not with that attitude, anyway.
Like, it's, there are no guests at this convention. Let's be clear. There are no guests. There are, there's no panel track, which I think is too bad. But, like, it's this massive tabletop gaming area. They do have a small video game room off to the side. But it's just largely, like, there's LARP, they've got LARPers, they've got board gaming, they've got role-playing games of all kinds, and it's this massive room, and then there's the vendor room where the three of us spend most of the con.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a really friendly convention run by really friendly people, and it is 100% like it's my favorite con right now, like, that I don't work for. Like,
I do want to note, though, to be fair, that they sometimes in the past they have had guests, but it's been like local,
yeah,
local people who work in the comic book industry. Usually, like, who is it? Tim Seeley, I think.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Tim Seeley, the artist.
Yeah, I know who Tim Seeley is.
Yeah, he's been there a couple times.
Tim Seeley and I have technically both contributed to the same fanzine in the same issue.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned this.
Fanboy is a local Eau Claire fanzine, and it's had the wildest contributors that you'd have ever expected from before they were famous. and me. I haven't put anything into that thing for like 18 years, but yeah, 18 years ago, Tim Seeley and I both appeared in an issue of Fanboy.
Nice.
But yeah, no, it's so fun. Like, it's just, the atmosphere is great. And also, I argue it's the best concessions at a convention in Wisconsin. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I can get behind that.
There's a good brat. And there's a good burger. And also, they do serve alcohol there.
Yep.
Which is funny, because pretty much so many of the people who attend that con are underage that hardly anyone's buying it. But it's available if you're an adult of legal drinking age.
And they had the ice cream this year. I don't know if they've had that in years past.
I didn't get that. I didn't see that.
The ice cream was pretty neat.
So this convention center is like, it's a good amount of convention space, and it's attached to a hotel, but it's also a strip mall. And that means, like, across the massive parking lot, there is literally a grocery store. And the first thing I do when I'm vending at a con is always make a grocery store stop for, like, provisions behind the table. And I don't have to go anywhere for that there. And it's, this was the first year that I actually bothered staying at the attached hotel. Usually, the last couple of years, we'd been staying at the Motel 6, like, across the parking lot. But we stayed at the, my wife and I, we stayed at the Holiday Inn Express attached to the, or is it a regular Holiday Inn? Whatever. It's a Holiday Inn something that's attached to the convention center where, like, it was literally, like, down a hallway. I don't think my wife, like, did not go outside between dinner Friday night and us leaving on Sunday. Yeah, of course, you had a bit of fun at the Econo Lodge there, Nick.
Yeah, I had a bit more adventure than I expected to. This involved, had someone inside the room that they gave us. Like, someone had already deadbolted themselves inside. We went to the desk, asked for a different room. We eventually got a room, but it was significantly smaller, and also the toilet exploded. Yeah, and then we finally got into a room that wasn't horribly awful. Although I didn't sleep very well.
That does not sound... That sounds like the opposite of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything else was really good, though, so I don't kind of... Like, it hasn't really stuck with me much, I guess.
Okay. Gen stayed at home.
I stayed at home.
That was smart.
Because I live half an hour away from the con, so I just take that drive back and forth, and it's really not that bad.
And we went to Denny's.
We did indeed go to Denny's.
This is a longabout way of saying, if you are in Wisconsin, or feel like going to Wisconsin, and you like gaming cons, next January, consider going to EverCon.
You really should.
Instead of apparently the midwinter gaming in Milwaukee that was also taking place that weekend.
That sure was a thing that I was not aware of until just now.
Yeah. EverCon is better. I said it. Because I don't think I'm ever going to be at the other con, so if I offended anybody, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to go to their con because I'll be at EverCon. So there.
Yay. Also, I don't know why, but it seems like every time we go to EverCon, we come up with really great ideas.
Mm-hmm.
We do.
It's true.
Yeah, that's where we came up with the idea for Stormwood and Associates, over a year ago. We'll have its, well, by the time this goes up, episode 40 will be up, because we're recording this a few days before we're going to put this out.
A likely story.
It is likely, because I control the upload.
Oh.
And the download. I'm inside your phone right now. I'm messing with things. I'm poking at things.
Oh, God.
It's just the character you play on Stormwood.
You have plenty of free space left, Tim. Thank you for letting me into your phone.
Tim.
I'm assuming someone listening to the show is named Tim. So I was hoping to freak him out. Or her. Maybe there's a woman named Tim. I don't know.
But anyway.
People make life choices, and their parents sometimes give them weird names.
Anyway, we should move to the big topic.
The big topic!
The biggest of topics.
Yes, the Skywalker saga as a whole.
That's right. All 9 episodes of the Skywalker saga now exist. And Nick and I have seen all of them.
I have not, because I'm a terrible Star Wars fan.
Gen hasn't seen the ending, but we're still going to make Gen talk about these films.
I mean, it's been a little bit spoiled. The ending has been a bit spoiled for me, and I was moving into a new house.
Speaking of spoilers, yeah. if you have not seen episode 9, we're going to warn you there will be spoilers in this conversation, because we don't care about ruining things for Gen. Mostly because Gen told us it was okay. Before people get mad at me, Gen literally told us it was okay.
And I will say it again, it is okay if it gets spoiled for me.
Okay. So with that in mind, we're gonna talk about, now that the sequel trilogy is done, it's Star Wars reactions, thoughts. Holy cow. Star Wars was a thing. This is a really vague topic. Anyways, so in preparation for this episode, I went out and I watched the prequels. For the first time since I saw them, since I watched the first two in theaters and the third one at an Otaku Anonymous meeting.
Oh, boy.
That peso had stolen from the internet. So I don't know about everybody's thoughts on Star Wars. I know that, the prequels were not as bad as I never thought the first two were as bad as everybody said when I first watched them. And watching them again, I kind of liked them. The prequels are still my least favorite films in the entire franchise, but there were actually, good things about them. The political story of Palpatine, the dramatic bitch, is just actually not bad.
I didn't rewatch them as recently as you did, Trey, but I guess I don't know. I actually came away from my rewatch of the prequels with, somehow simultaneously more generous to them, but also less generous to them.
Well,
you and I
watched the prequels.
I think they were worse movies than I remembered them being.
Well, you and I watched the prequels at very different ages.
Right.
I was an adult when all 3 prequels came out. I'm 10 years older than you. Effectively.
Right.
So the first Phantom Menace came out in what, 99?
99, yeah.
Yeah, I was 18 when the Phantom Menace came out.
It's
the reason why I didn't see episode 3 in the theaters was because I was poor and broke and couldn't afford a movie ticket. All right. Let's not kid ourselves. And I already knew the ending because I'd seen A New Hope. So it's I watched episodes 1 and 2, and I put out a whole I live tweeted my watching this. So if you go to my Twitter account at TRAGORN on Twitter, you can go back to it was the last New Year's week. So I watched episode 1 and episode 2 on the 30th and 31st of December, and I watched episode 3 on January 2nd. If you want to go dig back and find the Twitter thread. But, the love story is just as... I have a lot of theories about Padme. Padme Amidala is not a good person. Because if you take a look, a reading of episode 2, and episode 2 is Like, Anakin Skywalker is a emotionally stunted and unstable individual. It's like super obvious, right? I don't think there's any disagreement here, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's... I don't think that was done on purpose. I think George Lucas is god awful at writing dialogue.
Yeah, but
and,
yeah. So like, but and so Padme like is only a few years older than him, but clearly she's emotionally significantly more mature, right? I mean, she was, effectively. An elected leader, one of the youngest elected leaders in her planet's history, which means she has to have been a child prodigy, right? Like, that's the only rationalization for putting someone that young as a head of state, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, it was weird writing from Lucas to have a democratically elected queen that young. Like, young queens make sense when it's a hereditary monarchy. This is not a hereditary monarchy. So, but
it's almost like the idea of having an elected queen isn't brought up or even mentioned until episode 2.
Yeah.
Oh wait.
Yeah. So in episode 2 we've got this. So she's a senator now, and so she's emotionally mature. She is a politician, which means like I don't know. How much people like study politics, but like even good politicians who are good people still have to like calculate things from 20 different angles because they are working with not good people. Like politicking is a very complicated thing and it involves reading people and being able to, you know, judge people. And clearly like she, with her negotiation skills, like, she's good at that. So she can read people, and so she should be able to read Anakin in a heartbeat. And so Padme Amidala sees this guy who she hasn't seen since she was 10, by the way, which is because it's, or whatever, it's been 10 years since the previous movie, and they haven't seen each other the entire time, even though they said they were going to keep in touch. So these are, both people are bad at their word, or at least she is. But so she sees this hot guy who she can emotionally manipulate and control. This is literally, there's like, Padme Amidala is a predator.
I love that you've come up with this elaborate fan theory where I'm just in the corner being like, George Lucas can't write dialogue and he wrote these movies on the goddamn fly. Like,
right.
I want to get that out there. Like, because especially lately, I have been seeing people making these claims about, oh, George Lucas had everything planned out. No, he didn't. No, he freaking didn't.
The only thing he planned out when he made the prequels is that Anakin was going to get messed up in episode 3.
Yeah, there is literally, there's no proof that he had anything planned between episodes, even like back in the 80s. For the prequels.
Yeah. He had nothing. Yeah. It's originally Luke's sister was not going to be Leia. It's just that they decided they wanted to wrap it up in Jedi, and there was only one girl character.
There's been a lot of weird revisionist history and a lot of strange. The Star Wars fandom's relation to George Lucas is just so interesting.
Yeah.
But like, it just floats between either he's the worst thing ever or they put him up on a pedestal.
He gets a lot of credit for things Lawrence Kasdan came up with.
Yeah.
It's but anyways, back to Padme, because I'm not done with my Padme rant. I just want to point out, so either there are two theories. But Padme is either a predator or she's a sociopath or both. Right, because she is just but either of these ways, she's really thirsty. She is thirsty for that Anakin, in ways that are not rational, unless you think that maybe like she's just surrounded by like 60-year-olds all the time. And finally, here's a, you know, relatively aged young guy. Like, because if you look at the scene in which, and it's this one scene that really pulled this off, like, convinced me that this is what was happening, is the scene after Anakin goes and commits some war crimes, and he kills all the women and children, sand people. And watch Padme.
I mean, technically, that's not even war crimes. That's just random acts of violence.
Well,
he was
genocide. It's acts of genocide.
He wasn't on that.
Yeah.
He wasn't on that planet for any official reasons. He went looking for his mom and then murdered people.
Yeah, he murdered hundreds of people, including the women and the children. And he says this very, very specifically that he killed the kids. Which we'll get back to that in a minute. But if you watch Padme's response, she just does not give a shit. She's concerned about Anakin's feeling. She says, "You're only human." Like, as if, like, oh, it's okay. You just murdered all those women and children. You're only human. Like, anyway, it's like, anybody could forget anyone could accidentally do that. Whoop, fell over and murdered a whole bunch of kids. Only human. So it's like, so her entire reaction is about calming and controlling Anakin in that moment. She has no negative reaction. Now, I will say there is a second theory that she's not a sociopath, but she's just super racist. Where she doesn't see sand people as people. Because when you get to episode 3 and Anakin kills all the younglings, like, when Obi-Wan tells her, she seems to be alarmed that he killed, like, Anakin could never do that, but it just comes off as disingenuous. Because first off, yes, you know he could do that. He murdered a bunch of kids. Yeah, he told you he murdered a bunch of kids, like, a week before you got married. Let's just, come on, Padme, that's how your, like, your love story started with murdering kids. Of course it's going to continue with murdering kids. But, to be fair, she says that to Obi-Wan, who doesn't know that she's a sociopath, so. I think Padme Amidala was a bad person.
I don't know. See, I want to agree with you, but I spent literally my entire, like, edgelord teenager phase saying all the same things. And so I'm just being reminded of my 17-year-old self, and I hate it.
I'm sorry. I mean, they're all bad people. Like, I mean, Obi-Wan's the only one who's not really a bad person, but he's part of a broken system.
The prequels are interesting because
all
I think
Jedi are bastards.
No, I agree with that. I think there's something that I want to get back to on that. The prequels, I want to talk about specifically because there are a lot of really cool ideas there, especially from the politics angle. And unfortunately, they're just really, really bad movies. Like putting aside things like special effects are going to age with time. No special effect is going to look great forever. I accept this. You guys still there?
The AT-ATs on Hoth look good still.
Okay, that's fair. But, like, that said, there's so much emphasis is placed on these visual effects, and, like, the basics of cinematography are left barren. Like, shot composition is generally awful in the prequels, and it drives me up the wall. Now, there are some really good shots, like, but they're few and far between. They're not the vast majority of things. Like, honestly, the vast majority of things are people walking down hallways because the sets weren't actually constructed, so they had to digitally put a hallway in.
Well, in episode 1, there were some real sets.
Yeah, that's true. And episode 1 also has the most consistently not boring shots.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many things that I are like seem like good ideas, and then like thankfully expanded media has kind of given me good versions of it. Like, I know I continue to bring up the cartoons, but Clone Wars is kind of my primary canon for the prequels now. Like, Anakin was actually heroic in that version. Like, his fall to the dark side feels a lot more tragic because all of the things that lead him there were part of what made him heroic, but, like, he also was bad at keeping it in check. So it's this constant need to save people, sometimes putting himself at risk is taken to the, like, most extreme direction by where he's going. But things like that. Just the idea of this war really being one guy trying to manipulate two armies for his own gain. And, like, Clone Wars clarifies a little bit that part of how Palpatine got away with this is that there were a lot of people gaining from this financially. And I really like those ideas, and I wish we could have seen more of that, but instead it's just weird dialogue and tirades about sand and
Sheev Palpatine is a dramatic bitch.
Okay, can we talk about how good Ian McDiarmid's performance is as Palpatine in these movies, though?
Yeah,
because it's phenomenal.
It's so, like, weird that he kind of perfectly aged into the role for the prequels.
It is strange, yeah, because he nails it. He absolutely nails it in those movies.
Yeah, and let me tell you, like, one thing I will not complain about with the prequels is Palpatine's plan, even though it's dramatic and ridiculous and overdone, because everything about Sheev Palpatine is dramatic, ridiculous, and overdone from episode 1 through episode 9. The man can't do anything the easy way. Like, think about it. His entire political rise involves, like, always pretending to, like, his before the Empire, pretending to be two guys constantly and, like, running two armies against each other. Like, if
that he easily could have just given all of the troops to one army and then, like, not had to have fought himself.
Well, it's if Sheev Palpatine's going to take over something, he needs two armies. He needs exactly two armies. This is how Sheev works. Because you get the clones.
Two is the minimum.
The clones and the droids and the prequels. And then the Empire is established. And even when he has the Empire, think about how ridiculous. And I know that there are EU explanations for some of this that I'm just ignoring because they're no longer canon. So don't tell me about how the Death Star was built to fight off whatever other race of people or whatever that were showing up. That's not canon. Like, it's so once he's literally taken over, he runs the galaxy, right? Like, he runs the Empire. He builds a planet killer. Like, he's fighting rebels that are, like, distributed across, like, multiple sectors of space. And he builds a planet killer and just blows up a planet because...
To be fair, they started designing that thing before the Clone Wars started. And when you have a design that good, you don't not build it.
But he not only built one, he was building two, because there's no way that the Return of the Jedi Death Star wasn't already in construction during A New Hope. Considering how long it took him to build that first one. It took 20 years to build that first one. Because you see it at the end, you see it in construction at the end of Revenge of the Sith, where you have, you know, Vader, the Emperor, and Scorpius Tarkin staring at it. For those who don't understand the reference, in episode 3, they tried to put makeup on actor Wayne Pilgrim, who played Scorpius in Farscape, to make him look like a young Peter Cushing, and it looked terrible, so he's only in, like, a couple of faraway shots. And thank God they didn't use him. They cut his scenes. So if you want to complain about Rogue One to me about Tarkin, all I will say is that, like, Scorpius Tarkin happened, and that was a thing.
The only thing I'll complain about in Rogue One is that I've seen the actor who they digitally put Peter Cushing's face onto, and they honestly could have just had him be there, and I wouldn't have questioned it.
Right.
I wouldn't have.
Well, you know, it's a week before you see him next, you know.
Anyway. I still wouldn't have questioned it.
but their Mon Mothma actress was amazingly cast. Like, they
agreed.
They didn't CGI Mon Mothma.
Kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't have questioned it. I wouldn't have.
But anyway,
I just sort of accepted it.
So the Emperor builds, and now we get to the sequel trilogy, right? So, this is going to be major spoilers for Episode 9. So if you don't want to have anything spoiled, I don't have a time code for you because we're recording this live, so I can't tell you when we won't be, but. Obviously, it's been revealed in Episode 9 that Palpatine was behind the First Order the whole time, right? And that Snoke was pretty much just a meat puppet. That's really what it looks like. Like, you see the jar full of Snokes? Like, it's... So, now, at first I was mad about this, and I am mad about it in the sense of viewing the sequel trilogy as a trilogy on its own. But if you look at the Skywalker saga as 9 movies, I'm more okay with it. You know what I mean?
Although I know what you mean. I've got a lot of really contradictory thoughts about Episode 9.
Right. But so it's... anyways, so it turns out that Palpatine's been the bad guy for the whole sequel trilogy, and that Snoke really wasn't a guy. He was just a meat puppet. Piloted by the Force. Just, we have to live with that now. But that means he made the First Order, but it's revealed in Episode 9 he's also built the Final Order and whole other secret army. The First Order was already a secret army. He built a second secret army. Because Sheev Palpatine always needs to. And also, at some point, somebody fucked Sheev Palpatine.
Yeah, we gotta... That's the worst thing, is, like, looking at how... That might be the worst thing about Episode 9, is looking at how old Rey's parents look in the flashback. It had to have been while he was melty-faced. I'm sorry. It had to have been.
Do it. Do it. Do it.
I'm sorry, but this
down.
Is the thing. Thanks, JJ.
Thanks, because if his face looks like that, what's the rest of him look like? Nah.
Oh, God.
There are so many. We're not. This is not an explicitly tagged podcast, so.
Gonna say anything further about that.
I have so many jokes that I cannot say. So it's like Episode 9, we should probably talk about a little bit here. Episode 9 was the worst movie out of the sequel trilogy. I don't think I'll get much disagreement on this podcast. I know people who will disagree with me.
Yeah, you'll get no arguments out of me. I enjoyed the film. Do not get me wrong.
I enjoyed parts of it. My wife and I had very different experiences watching that movie and she got annoyed with me because I was so negative afterwards because she liked it. But it was there are certain things that bother me severely in that film. There are other things that, you know, here's the reason why Episode 9 was so unsatisfying for me, and I think, like, and don't get me wrong, I like the movie. Like, I like the movie in many ways. My description of Episode 9 is that I can live with this. That's my description of Episode 9. It's just that everybody is so powerful in that movie.
That's fair.
it's like if you look at the force battles from episodes 1 through 8, like a pretty wide swath, like there's a limit to how powerful the heroes and villains are. You know, even in episode 6, the Emperor, he's just throwing lightning. Like, he's throwing lightning that doesn't kill Vader, like, immediately. Like, it eventually kills him because of so much, but, like, it takes work. Mm-hmm. You know, so Vader, you know, it's, like, the solution to dealing with Palpatine in episode 6 is pick him up and throw him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, And Luke was always like, and like Luke's powers at the level of The Last Jedi made sense. He was a master doing the complex force projection. You know, like he had been studying the force for a long time. And like people talked about how that was so too powerful a force move in episode 8. Some of the same people who complained about that, like, are saying how much they love episode 9 and so on.
I was about to say that. Like, it seems like the same people who bitched about that suddenly are just like, just. I can't come up with any analogies that are acceptable on a not explicit, like, podcast, but they're filling their jeans with how happy they are,
like,
that Chief Palpatine shot a Kamehameha wave into the sky.
Chief Palpatine lifted an entire fleet of ships out of the surface of a planet, like, assuming they were already built and just hidden there, is what I'm assuming. I'm assuming he didn't magic them into creation, that they were actually, like, built by people with materials.
See, I guess I didn't read it that he did that on his own. I thought he just kind of, like, gave a signal and everyone
See, that was not clear to me. Okay, your way makes more sense.
That was the impression. You're not, the thing is, though, you're not the first person who has described it as that. So I feel like that is a problem on the filmmaker's end, because you're not the first person I've heard assume that that's what happened.
Yeah. It's, like, but also, like, and apparently that whole crowd of people were ghosts of the Sith, like, I guess. But, like, the whole plan doesn't make sense. Like, the ending, like, everyone's
it's not
so powerful.
Like, yeah.
And everyone is, like, turbocharged, and it's like, although I still see people complaining about Rey not being trained enough, I'm like, Rey's had more on-screen training than any other protagonist in the entirety of Star Wars. Like, they had her, she trained with Luke as much as Luke trained with Yoda, and then she trained more with Leia.
Off screen for an extended period.
Yeah, and we've established that Leia's been trained.
Can I take a moment to remind people the entirety of Luke's lightsaber training was getting shot at by a drone while wearing a blindfold?
Obi-Wan has taught you well. Obi-Wan made him wear a blindfold.
Yeah, made him wear a blindfold and had him try to deflect shots from a drone.
He knew
Obi-Wan
for like 2 days. He knew Obi-Wan Kenobi for like 2 days.
The beginning and end of it, and that's...
But anyways, so like, and again, I'm not complaining about Luke's level of power. I am just saying that, like, Rey's had more on-screen training than any other protagonist in the series. Well... with the exception of Anakin, who was actually trained as a Jedi. Okay.
But that wasn't on screen. I mean, you have to take their word for it that it happened during a big time skip.
But, like, Anakin was doing shit in episode 1. So...
Yeah, before training, Anakin was successfully flying and repairing a fighter plane, you know...
He
before
took
his
out
voice
the
changed.
Entire Trade Federation control ship.
Before his voice cracked, yeah. That's...
Like, it's... But so, like, that's why I'm... I don't know. It's my thoughts on episode... It's a very uneven movie. It has some great moments that made me tear up. It also has some moments that made me go, what the fuck? The fact that Disney won't let Finn and Poe kiss is just disappointing.
Can I point something out, though, like, going back to your power thing real quick? Because I do think this is kind of important.
Okay.
The big boost in, like, people's Jedi abilities was especially frustrating for me because Ryan Johnson... So I watched a lot of... To make my King Arthur Star Wars video that I did a couple years ago now. I guess it was only 1 year ago now. Anyway, no, it was two.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago.
I was looking at all of the extras on The Last Jedi Blu-ray. I wanted to get some more insight. And Rian Johnson, the director of The Last Jedi, and I know just by saying that, some people in the audience are going to not listen to anything I have to say after just saying that name. But Rian Johnson's, one of his big things with the movie was he didn't want the Force to be a superpower.
Yeah.
Like, that was a big point for him, is that the Force is a religion, and it's a way of life, and it's not a superpower. And then it is absolutely a superpower in this movie. Like in episode 9, I mean. It is just absolutely, like... One of the things I love about the ending of The Last Jedi is just you have Luke doing this amazing feat and defeating the First Order without killing anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and saving everyone he intended to save. Again, no one then, and without like a drop of blood spilling. And like that to me is the most Jedi thing anyone has ever done in any of these movies. And then, like, the idealized Jedi, I mean, yeah. Not the actual Jedi that, like, that was the first time any character has ever lived up to that Jedi ideal for me. And then, like, here we've got jumping, suddenly Rey and Kylo are jumping, like, several meters into the air. And that was also really frustrating to me, because, like...
Well, Luke does it in episode 6.
I mean, fair, it's just J.J. Abrams... directed the Star Wars movie with my favorite lightsaber duel ever, which is episode 7. And I love that duel because both, or really all three combatants, Finn, Rey, and Kylo, they all look borked. Like, beginning to end, they look effed up. And tired, and sweaty, and haggard, and, like, you actually feel like there's an ebb and flow to it. And I don't know.
And also, like, I really thought that, like, the whole point of Episode 8 was that accepting that the Jedi were wrong, because that's really, it's clearly not what Lucas ever intended with Episodes 1 through 3, but it's super obvious in retrospect, watching Episodes 1, 2, and 3, that the Jedi were stagnant and awful and, you know...
And it's funny that George Lucas, like, would probably... I get the impression that he wouldn't have intended that, but yet the media that he oversaw kept implying that. Like, even beyond his own movies, like, where Clone Wars leaves off, you have the Jedi wrongly turning away one of their best people because she committed a faux pas in their eyes. Yeah. You know, you get... You keep having the Jedi make patently horrible decisions.
Well, I think it's because everybody but George saw it that way, and George paid no attention to any of the spinoff media.
You know, unless he was telling Dave Filoni last second he has to bring Darth Maul back from the dead.
Yeah.
Which is an actual thing that happened.
Yeah. And then no one else noticed until Solo. Because, let's face it, while many of our listeners have watched The Clone Wars and Rebels, most people didn't.
Now streaming on Disney Plus. Sorry.
That's how I watch the prequels, because I don't own them. I own all the other Star Wars movies, but I don't own episodes 1, 2, and 3. I've never watched The Clone Wars or Rebels. So my thing is, though, it's like, and then suddenly, so all the Jedi are in Rey now, which is fine. But, like, the whole reason, like, Palpatine's whole plan was that all the Sith were going to go into Rey when she struck her down, she struck him down. And then they fight, but then she strikes him down. Right?
Oh, God.
And while the Jedi are all in her, does that mean all the Sith are in her too? Like, can we retcon this ending to be, like, the good, like, both the Jedi and the Sith weren't great, but she has the balance of both the dark side and the light side inside her.
And I really don't think all those ghosts are going to be too happy, like, sharing condos inside of her next to each other.
That's a fair point. I'm willing to bet, I don't think, like Obi-Wan was directly involved in ending, like, a good chunk of those Sith Lords. They're not going to be pleased.
Well, they're all in Rey now.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand why it made a difference that Rey would have struck him down immediately or later. Like, she still strikes him down. Still does the thing.
Maybe it was a part of the ritual. See, that's the other... They don't really... This was a Russell T. Davies ending. Where... Logically, things don't add up, but there are a lot of things that emotionally do pay off. And depending on how much you need things to logically pay off, it might affect, like, how much you're going to enjoy other things. Like, again, there are things I legitimately... I don't want to just talk
like,
about things
I
that bother me, but there
I actually liked the dyad and the force thing.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, and no one saw it coming, but it also explains, like, how their connection's getting stronger. And, like, at first I thought, oh, the passing of physical objects, that's a little cheesy, but then as, like, that kept happening, like, I felt like it was a good, legitimate build for the final thing where she passes, you know, Ben the lightsaber.
I liked that. Hell, going into this movie, I was fundamentally opposed to the idea of redeeming
so
Ben
was
Solo.
I.
I
was
did,
completely
I thought it was
against
very,
it, and...
And Adam yet? Driver pulled it off.
Yeah, I think
Adam Driver
helps.
Is an excellent actor, and that's part of why it worked.
It helps
yeah.
that he doesn't make it, because he doesn't have to go then and come face-to-face with all the people he's victimized.
Yeah, which honestly would have been a more interesting thing, idea. See the third season of Avatar: The Last Airbender? Throwing
rough,
that out
buddy.
There.
It's I've never watched Avatar, but I understand the reference and the story point because I read Tumblr.
Prince Zuko's redemption arc is the best redemption arc in any piece of fiction I have ever seen.
The kiss was dumb and the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity.
That's fair, but that redemption arc was
the redemption
damn
arc,
perfect.
Yeah, it's
damn perfect.
Yeah. It's, like, I don't know. It, like, I genuinely liked it. Obviously, there are things they had to rework the way it happened with, you know, the loss of Carrie Fisher. There are people who don't understand that, like, Leia was triggering the memory of Han. Like,
that... Yeah, that was kind of... There were a lot of things that...
Like,
that was
super obvious to me when I watched it.
That was one of the things that made the most sense to me, because the only, like, consistent thing that we've seen Ben Solo come out from the Kylo Ren facade for is his mom. Like, it is the only thing that broke the Kylo Ren persona in the past.
Yeah.
Like, he would violently kill every father figure in his life, or at least try to stab them in the chest, but... His mom, he chokes anytime he tried to hurt her.
Yeah.
Anytime.
And then, you know, but like, and like, yeah, it's that scene with the memory of Han Solo. Like, it was just, it was good. It, like, and once you get to that point in the movie, I got more on board.
Can I make here's an unpopular opinion. I thought they did a really good job with the Carrie Fisher footage they had.
I
was really impressed. I thought they did a good job.
The problem is, knowing it, my brain immediately looks for how they did it and just starts noticing that every scene is character says 10 lines of exposition and then she goes, uh-huh. And I know it's just the limitation of what they have, you know, like
that
I'm not...
didn't bother me. I mean, they're really
Rose Tico got done dirty, though, and...
That pissed me off. That pissed me off to the moon. Sorry.
Literally, you could have just written out the Hobbit guy and just given her all those lines, and everyone would have been fine.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I'm very frustrated with how they treated Rose.
I mean, she's very
Rose
much...
is my favorite character of the new trilogy.
She's
so
the
that...
Lando of the new trilogy is what she is. She is significant and introduced in the second movie in the trilogy and then barely in the third one, but technically there.
Fair.
And why is Wedge Antilles a gunner? They put him on a poster. He's in there for like 2 seconds.
Far be it for anyone who is promoting this movie to be above things that happen for 2 seconds. See the lesbian kiss.
I mean, I'm okay that it's in there, but like, again,
I'm okay that it's in there, but this
let
is this
Finn
is
and
LGBT.
Poe be boyfriends.
This is the kind of LGBT representation of, oh, you have a seat at the table, have the scraps of the scraps.
Yeah, it's, well, but it's also, it's like, Finn and Poe, like, the actors were fighting for it, JJ wanted it, but Disney said no.
Yeah, and that's really, I'm frustrated with how cowardly that was handled.
And you can't even blame, like, markets like China, because Star Wars notoriously does terribly in China.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this movie was not going to do well there no matter what, because they have no connection to the original trilogy, because when the original trilogy came out, American movies weren't allowed.
It's true.
Yeah, it's, all the Star Wars movies have done terribly in China.
Yeah, I got nothing. This has been it's been a very strange.
Well,
I really did enjoy. There's been a lot of hate heaped at decisions that were made like along this way, and even I'm gonna say this, like, even if you didn't like episode 9, and I get it, but like, I really do not understand the argument from people of, oh, this retroactively ruins the other two movies.
I do think there are things that I immediately kind of was bothered only because I'm annoyed at JJ. Because okay, so retconning Snoke into being Palpatine's meat puppet, like. I don't know, like, I feel like the Palpatine reveal at the beginning of this movie would have made sense if they had seeded Palpatine in episode 7.
No, I agree with
and
that.
And JJ made both of these movies.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that that's necessarily the problem. I guess I'm advocating for what YouTuber Just Right made an argument for, which is like, there is a place for headcanons, and I think for some people, the happiest ending that this Star Wars saga is going to have is the end of episode 8, when a bunch of kids are sharing the story of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, also, like, yeah, they didn't use...
To me, that might be... I think I like that ending more.
Like, I feel like there was this huge hook in the end of episode 8 that was just ignored.
Like the hook that followed up on the idea that JJ himself introduced of the Force Awakening.
Uh-huh.
And maybe like the idea that maybe like this is a religion meant for everybody and not for laser sword cultists.
Yeah. For, you know, for a movie where they're fighting fascists, the heroes seem to be awfully, people seem to be awfully obsessed with the bloodlines of the heroes.
Yup.
But
yep.
Overall, I actually, so here's my thoughts on episode 9 is that I didn't like it as a conclusion of the sequel trilogy when I viewed the sequel trilogy as the whole of a series, you know what I mean? Of a 3-part story. When I view it in the context of episodes 1 through 9, it feels much better to me. And so I think that, like, I think prequel fans are more likely to like it only because they have a much more emotional attachment to some of that structure that then feels stronger through it. It's like, I've watched episodes 4, 5, and 6 so many times that I honestly can't remember. I've seen, you know, every edit of those films. I've seen them in theaters. I've seen them on VHS as a small child looking at a, you know, blurry, like, whatever 1970s 13-inch TV that my parents had till I was a teenager. Like, I watched those movies so many times, and so I had such a strong connection to them. And then episodes 7 and 8 I watched at least 2 times in theaters apiece and have gone back to. And so, like, I had only seen the prequels 1 time when I saw episode 9. Like, I had only seen those movies once when I saw episode 9. And so I wasn't thinking about them as part of the context for the film. And so when I saw episode 9, I was really disappointed in it because I felt like it didn't fulfill the story as a conclusion to the trilogy. It felt like it, like, parts of it felt disconnected from the last two movies we'd watched, and it's just like, Now, going back and rewatching the prequels has really helped recontextualize the film for me, where there are still things about it I don't like. I don't like the fact that it's an endless MacGuffin hunt. I don't like, you know, I think that the fake out with Chewie is ridiculous. And
it was very strange.
It doesn't feel earned. I do think that there's the standard thing where JJ, he introduced us to 2 characters on a planet and then blew up the planet so we'd have weight. But, oh, look, those 2 characters somehow magically made it off. So all the emotional weight of that earlier scene is lifted because the 2 people you liked made it off. I mean, it's nice to see Kerry Russell in another J.J. Abrams project because, you know, Felicity was his first television series, but whatever. Also, the only other time that he wrote the beginning and end to a story. J.J. Abrams does not write endings.
I'm kind of on a similar page. Again, it's so weird because I have all these things negative, but I actually did enjoy most of the movie. And I'll admit that I was looking at it as like a, but yeah, I was kind of trying to see it as this complete form of the thing. And I, okay, go on.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Like, there are absolutely things that I think did work. There's a lot of character banter I really like. There's a lot of, crap. See, now I start talking. I
Oscar
think about
Isaac
other
has so much chemistry with everybody on screen. I was afraid for a moment that they were going to put Ray and Poe together because of their one conversation. He had so much chemistry with her.
fair.
It was,
Oscar
Isaacs is amazing.
Like, I really did enjoy that. I enjoyed, there's actually, I kind of liked the treasure hunt aspect. I just kind of wish they wouldn't have done so many planets and maybe cut it down.
Yeah.
I'm endlessly frustrated by the fact that the Knights of Ren didn't really, we have our new Boba Fett. There's like 7 of them, but we have our new Boba Fett in that we have a bunch of guys with cool outfits that have no actual bearing of importance in the story.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of sad, because again, Rian Johnson actually said the reason that he made up the Praetorian Guards instead of having the Knights of Ren there was that he thought that Kylo would have more of an emotional connection with them and wouldn't just cut through them like a bunch of, like, well-trained flunkies.
Yeah.
And, well, yeah.
Well, you know,
so much for that. I loved Daisy Ridley and Adam Driver especially. I think they had great performances. I really enjoyed the final fleet battle, kind of in spite of Palpatine's Kamehameha wave, because, like, I'm gonna say this had a better flow to it than the final battle in Endgame. Because it actually felt like there was an ebb and flow to the battle. Because in Endgame, really, once the gates open, the Avengers never start losing again for the rest of the fight. It's pretty one-sided.
Yeah, the Russo brothers don't really know how to direct that sort of thing. I'm just going to say it. The Russo brothers, don't get me wrong, I love Winter Soldier, and I like the movies they made. but visually also they're not good at like doing those large battles and telling a story with it. Like if you compare like the stuff in Endgame and Infinity War to like the battle from Joss Whedon's Avengers movie, the first one, like just there's a shot in Endgame where like you get the shot from Avengers and I'm like, oh wow, this movie's gonna be better shot for like 15 seconds here.
And yeah, it was like just the ebb and flow of the battle was so intense, and that there were a lot of emotional payoffs there that I enjoyed the hell out of.
Yeah.
Once
you start rolling into the ending, I think I like episode 9 a lot in that part. That's why my response of episode 9 is I can live with this in the fact that it was good enough where it didn't diminish my experiences of the earlier films in the series.
I'll also say this, that bringing in a significant other's opinion, because my wife is also a lot not as hard on the movie as I was. It's no secret my spouse can be very abrasive about a lot of fandoms that she's in, but this is probably Raina has said this is the only Star Wars trilogy where she actually wants to see all three movies again.
Wow.
Because normally there's one movie she just doesn't care for.
Which one of the original trilogy does
Jedi?
She doesn't like Jedi?
Jedi.
I argue that the original cut is much more enjoyable. It's the entire pacing of the Jabba's Palace scene in the special edition.
She's never watched the special edition.
Oh, really?
She's never seen the special edition. She just does not care.
Well, I mean, if you don't like Jedi, you're not going to like the special edition, because the special edition is a worse version of Jedi, pacing-wise. And I will stand by that.
I would say everything-wise. Like, people can complain about weird edits to episode 4 and getting rid of the potato asteroids in Empire. I know I do. But, like, to me, Return of the Jedi is George Lucas just mad crappering over a perfectly good movie.
Yeah.
Like, it is a mad crapper attack, and no scene comes out unscathed.
The end of the film is ruined by, like, so this is an issue I have with the end of Jedi and the special editions. Now, it's going to this instant celebrations across the Empire that the Emperor is dead. Like, we see all of, like, the original version of Return of the Jedi, you just have the victory of the rebels on Endor. Right? And God
bless.
And it's
this intimate little thing.
Yeah, and, you know, Yub Nub is playing, and, you know, the Ewoks are definitely eating the stormtroopers. Let's not kid ourselves. They eat people. Ewoks eat people. That's not even a fan theory that, say, they were going to cook Han Solo. But anyways, like, it goes from this intimate celebration of the people who just had a victory to, like, this thing where apparently everyone's celebrating across the Empire. But you know what happens if you just kill a dictator?
There's a period of chaos.
There's a structure. There's a, like, why would Coruscant be, like, having celebrations? It was the center of Imperial power. It was the capital of the Empire. All of the higher-ups in the Empire were there. They'd be keeping order. They would be they'd be sending stormtroopers to take down the protests in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there would be, like, all of the regional governors are still there. Like, and it's, I mean, like, I know the EU is not canon. But, like, part of the whole point of the EU is that they have to deal with all of these, like, regional governors and these remnants of the Empire. And in episode 7, we find out that they drove the Empire out of the charted space into the uncharted space, and that's how they rebuilt into the First Order. And that's fine, but, like, it wouldn't be this immediate everyone celebrating moment. Like, and it makes no sense as this galactic celebration, because there are all these people who would still be in power trying to maintain that power. And yes, there would be this wave of, especially considering how much the Emperor held together the Empire of the Cult of Personality, you'd be looking at fractions of falling apart, and then the New Republic would have to build itself by, like, recruiting people and restoring order. But that takes, like, in the EU, it takes, like, 5 years. You know? And which is relatively fast for an empire that size, but sure, like, it takes them 5 years to really build the Republic into a functional government in the EU. So, it, like, just, like, having, like, this immediate celebration, I'm like, and the stormtroopers are everywhere, guys. Like, there's a vast major army and Star Destroyers everywhere. And, like, this isn't just, no, you don't flip a switch. And it ruins the ending because it goes from something, because all that it just pulls me out of the movie every single time. Why, like, maybe Naboo's, like, out in the middle of nowhere, so maybe they were sympathetic the whole time, you know, like, fine, and, like, some of the other spots, but, like, Coruscant, like, is going to be the hardest planet to liberate out of all of them. They are not going to immediately be pulling down statues of the Emperor, or whatever, like, fireworks. Who had those fireworks ready to go?
Yeah, no, I'm like I said, mad crappering all over his own project. It's not even his project.
Yeah, that's, like, the only movie that, okay, so I think that Empire is Fine is a special edition. That's the only original trilogy movie I will watch as a special edition and not complain. Because the pacing is just, so, like, I can live with George screwing up A New Hope because that was his movie from beginning to end. Like, I don't want those extra scenes, but, like, when I watch the movie, I'm just like, okay. I mean, but the special effects look awful. Like, it's, the CGI shots do not age as well as the model shots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just, like, the model shots aren't perfect. Like, the fact that the Vader squadron are clearly all on one pole together makes their flight look very incongruous with the rest of the way things are shot. But, like, the CGI X-Wings don't look good in their dramatic close-ups. They look artificial compared to the models because they did very good models. And, like, it's, there's the flying into Mos Eisley, driving into Mos Eisley on a land speeder, like, it's super obvious that it's, like, CGI C-3PO on the back of that land speeder. And, like, all the CGI dugongs just, like, pull me out. And there's, like, one spot where, like, one just walks in front of the camera for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And actually obscures the scene. It's not... Oh, I need to, like, I have the
specialized
editions. I have the despecialized editions, and I hope that they keep updating those with updates because they're not perfect. But, like, I own legal copies of the original trilogy, but they're special editions. So I've been watching the despecialized editions while the legal copy I have sits on a shelf, and I don't feel guilty because I gave them. I have bought that trilogy 3 times. I will only buy it a 4th time if they come out with an HD transfer of the real versions of those movies.
Mm.
And it's episode 9 is just mostly disappointing because, like, I love the original trilogy from beginning to end. Episodes 7 and 8 are actually probably 2 of my favorite movies in the entire franchise because Rey's my favorite character in all of Star Wars, and because there's a set of scenes in episode 7 that made me connect more to her character than anyone else in the entire franchise for me. Like, don't get me wrong, I like Luke Skywalker. Like, I'm not complaining about, like, I loved the original trilogy since childhood and I still love it. So, like, I'm not trying to crap on any character, but Rey's loneliness and, like, all that in, like, her, in the way she's introduced in episode 7 just, like, got me to the point of tears when I was watching it the first time in theaters when I had no nostalgia for it.
Mm.
So that's why, like, and I think that she's really well served in episode 7 and 8. Episode 9 I can live with. Episodes 7 and 8, though, like, are two of my favorite movies. Like, Episode 7, I think I like more as, like, the way it makes me feel when I watch it. But Episode 8 is so beautifully shot that I just love to stare at it. Like, Episode 7 is the one I like to, like, that I feel more when I watch it. But Episode 8 is the one I want to, the one I want to stare at.
Episode 8 engages my brain more.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I get it. Like, yeah, these are beautifully, the 7 and 8 are beautifully made movies, and 9 is, it's okay.
Like, it's,
I wish it was better, but it's okay.
Like, in many ways, I think Empire is a better film than Episode 7 and 8, but Episode 7 and 8 I like watching more. So, like, when people, like, do all their ratings of Star Wars movies, like, their favorites to their least favorites, like, Episode 7 and 8 are always floating at the top with Empire. And then Episode 9 is the first one of the sequel trilogies that I like it better than the prequels.
Yeah, but I'll still take any of the Disney films over the prequels. Yeah. I'm going to be honest. Literally any of the Disney films.
Gen's been really quiet.
Yeah, I mean, don't know how much I personally care about Star Wars. I will say in general, it's very interesting to see the series come to a close, because it has been like a huge piece of media for so long.
Yeah, but like, okay, so it's interesting. I mean, first off, Star Wars isn't ending, because the Skywalker saga is ending, but like the Mandalorian's got an order for season 2.
Yes, understandable.
Yeah,
but like, I mean, to have like the 9 films, because, you know, like my folks went and saw the original trilogy like in theaters back in the 70s.
You know, it's, well, also there's this weird thing where like, I think it's more weird that Star Wars is never done anymore, because I grew up in a period where Star Wars was finished. You know, when I was a kid, there was like, because like, yeah, the Jedi came out after I was alive, but like, I was like 2. So it's like, for me, Star Wars was always a thing that always existed. So I was part of that generation. But like, in my entire childhood, there was just 3 movies and it was done. Like, A New Hope, which no one called it A New Hope back then. It's, I want to, people have to understand, like, it was, when that movie came out, it was just Star Wars, and it didn't, like, while they slapped that A New Hope subtitle on, like, in its re-release, it wasn't in the crawl in the initial release, it was in the re-release in theaters that they added that, A New Hope, to the crawl, before Empire. But it was always Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi were the 3 movies, and then it really wasn't until, the 90s, when they did the remastered, but not the special editions, where they went back to the film, and the remastered VHS release, where it says Star Wars in giant letters, and then A New Hope in tiny letters, and then the rest of the movies, like, are Empire, and that I even noticed A New Hope was on there. Like, I literally, like, had watched the movie a dozen times and hadn't even noticed it was called A New Hope. So, like, but, like, growing up, like, and so I turned 19 in 1999, but I was 18 when, I think, what time of year did Star Wars Episode 1 come out?
I don't know. I was obsessed. I think it was summer. That sounds right.
But I mean,
I don't remember. Everyone was obsessed at the time.
Yeah, The Phantom Menace came out in May of 99, so I'm 18 years old. But from childhood to 18 years old, Star Wars was done. Like, it was just done. And so, like, and then the prequels happened. And so for a few years we had more Star Wars, but then it was done again.
And it was supposed to, I remember that feeling of, it was supposed to be done. Like, that was the distinct feeling I had. And can I amend this just a little bit? Because I really want to make a comment here, because this is something else strange that I do need to comment on. For years, like, when episode 7 was about to come out, even, people were saying to me, well, like, what if it's bad and it ruins Star Wars? I'm gonna be honest, you guys. Star Wars was already ruined for me. Like, as far as I was concerned, the prequels were 3 consecutive bad movies, so it couldn't have gotten worse from there.
Oh, hun, it was bad so long. It was bad before Empire because of the following words. Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh, yeah, exactly. There's...
The second thing that ever came out on screen was the Holiday Special.
And most of the EU was bad, not taking that back.
Even the parts I liked are bad in the EU. The Thrawn Trilogy I love, but it has Luke.
And Force Ferrets or whatever. Anyway, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Anyways. Woof. Oh my god, we are an hour and 35 minutes into this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Hour and 36.
I really let you guys go this time.
Thankfully we don't have mailbag. So that's the good news. Which means we just have to go to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. There's so much more to talk about Star Wars. But we're just going to move on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge because, frankly...
Indeed.
Frankly, this is borderline one of our longest episodes yet. So, all right. So the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge, for those who don't remember, is part of the show where I read a line from the book, and the challenge to you, the listener, is to guess what book I'm reading from. If you guess correctly, you get the following things. 1, we put your name on our website in our Hall of Awesome. 2, we say your name out loud on every episode as a member of the Hall of Awesome. And 3, I tell you Vomit Hat Steve's real name if you ever ask me in person, because he is a real person.
He is. I can confirm.
I mean, his photo's on the website on the Hall of Awesome. But, all right. The current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamite, Zero, Rina Incenti, Cheese McDamu, Krista, Slithery D, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Band, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lilysaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, The Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shuzuo, Sakura Sunset, Joel Kreisman, Patrick Delahanty, and Wonderland Hearts. You know, I saw Zero for the first time in a long time at Evercon this year.
I saw Zero again. It was good to see him.
Yeah, all right. I've been reading from the same book for a while. And I'm going to pick that up again here, and I'm going to open it up to a random page. I'm going to read your line of the book. A dozen or more enormous snow-white birds, each the size of a rowboat, with long straight wings that trailed on the water behind them, very long wings, at least 2 yards in length. Were they birds? If you know what book that's from, go to nerdandtie.com/contact, go down to the mailbag form and tell us. Or if you have anything else you would like to have read aloud on the podcast, go there and do that there too. What are your thoughts? What are your minds? What are your favorite Star Wars movies? How wrong are we? How right are we? How left are we? I don't know. Tell us. Tell us your dreams. Tell us your hopes. Tell us the reason why you ate that sandwich, Tim. You need to stop eating that sandwich, Tim.
It's gross, and it's bad for diabetes.
Dear Lord.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Nerd and Die. As always, we have been Genproc.
I'm Trey Dorn.
And I'm Nick Izumi.
Remember, you can find out information about our sponsor, Strange Things Afoot, in the show notes of this episode, including a link to their Kickstarter. And thank you, Mr. Pez, for also sponsoring this episode. If you would like to follow Nerd and Tie on social media, you can follow us on Twitter at Nerd and Tie, on Tumblr, nerdandtie.tumblr.com, and at Facebook at facebook.com/nerdandtie. Remember, if you want to support this show financially, you can sponsor an episode like Mr. Pez did. You can choose to support our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie, or you can contribute to our Patreons, where I have a Patreon at patreon.com/TRAGORN. And Nick has a Patreon at patreon.com/NickAzumi. And Gen exists online in many ways and has a coffee at coffee/Genjamin. And search for Ocelot Dude Designs on the off chance that Gen's Etsy store is open. You'll never know until you go looking and seeking through for those things that you wish to have purchased by or place in your home in an attractive corner or something. I don't know. With that, as your hope and dream into the future, as you move onwards into your day, into your night, into whatever time of universe you exist in, that's right, time of universe, just think, somewhere deep inside, you managed to listen to this entire audio program.
Good job.
And remember to keep on spocking in the free world.
That's technically Star Trek. We were talking about Star Wars. You're going to anger the fans.
Oh, no.
Quick, make a Babylon 5 reference.
It's okay. I don't know. The fans who are going to be upset were already upset because I brought Rian Johnson up repeatedly in positive ways. And
I heard
said
Knives
I liked
Out
Rose
is really
Tico.
Good.
I did, too.
We should go see Knives Out. We could have
Maybe
talked
I will
about
go
that.
See Knives Out.
We could have talked about Knives Out. I haven't seen it yet.
Me neither, and I want to.
I think they're making a sequel.
I've heard nothing but good.
I think it's time to end the show. Or something. Goodbye!